Blog Talk Radio.
Perfect. Thank you.
It is 6:06 on August the 28th. We're running out of days in August. It's starting to cool down a little bit. And the temperature right now, speaking of which, let me check my little app on my phone here. 69 degrees, 96 high today, 67 low. So, yes, we are getting down a little bit. Hopefully, we got a lot more rain in the forecast that's coming out of the Weather Channel is for the West Coast to get a lot more El Nino, and they're even trying to figure out in California and San Francisco whether they're going to have to put this Super Bowl make plans for flooding. Then they feel like they're going to get a lot of rain, and anyway, it was an interesting question or point that Carly Fiorina made to Governor Brown when she said, you know, the environmentalists stopped from building any more dams or anything to take care of the water. In any event, the issue of whether the Californians have taken care of their resources is not really, obviously they haven't in a sense, because they haven't done anything on water infrastructure. But if you're a environmentalist, you're going to say it doesn't really matter. The end is here. Man is creating all this doom. But anyway, I thought it was interesting. This El Nino event looks like it could really kick up a lot of water for these people. Now, I've got two guests today, one of which is in the first hour, Carlos Campo, who you will have heard before if you listened to the show in the past, and a friend of mine, and I've got him on the line. Good morning, Carlos. How you doing
today?
Good
morning, Kelly. I'm great. How about you?
Not too bad. How's the weather out in Ohio?
Beautiful. You know, almost a touch of fall in the low 60s.
Very nice. And you guys have gotten a lot of rain in the last few months, the last, say, 3 months.
Yeah. You know, June was very wet. But, boy, when it stopped raining, I don't think we've had much of any rain at all since then. It's been just beautiful.
Yeah. And the Ohio River is impressive.
You know, this entire area is pretty incredible. I don't think people really realize this. Beautiful area, just in about an hour south of Cleveland or so. But when they named Ashland, it was after Henry Clay's beautiful spot in Kentucky. And boy, you just head east from there and start seeing the rolling hills of Ohio, and it's really pretty spectacular.
Well, Carlos is a friend of mine, and he's been on the show a few times before. And Carlos was just named the president of Ashland University in Ohio. So, that's in Ashland, Ohio, right?
That's right. It's, you know, one of those places, like so many, were founded in the 19th century. This one tied to the Brethren Church, but you know the history of higher ed pretty well. There were dozens and dozens of schools with church affiliations that were started. But this one here in Ashland, and it's been going strong ever since.
Well, that's nice. Now, Carlos has Hispanic, he's Cuban. And so anyway, we were talking on the phone recently, and you know, with the way that the presidential race is kind of breaking out, and also the issue of the growth of the Hispanic vote in America and the presence of the community and everything, really taking over the black vote in terms of importance as the number one minority. And we decided he'd come on the show this morning. We talk a little bit about something that is big around here, which is the Hispanic vote and the mindset, what's going on nationally. And so, Carlos, did you, by the way, get a chance to were you listening when Donald Trump told Jorge Ramos to get sit down and shut up?
You know, I did see that recap of that exchange. And, you know, it's one of those things where there's plenty of finger pointing on both sides. I don't think either man rose to the level of either journalism or presidential candidacy too well. But it was an interesting exchange.
Yeah. Now. All right. So and I did some research on Ramos after this. And here's an example of the kind of thing that he talks about when he was on Anderson Cooper, and he said Anderson Cooper asked him if he was grandstanding, and Ramos said, "I'm just a reporter asking questions, but I also believe, Anderson, that you have to go the extra mile to be tough on those that are in power, speaking truth to power." We hear this repeatedly in the media. We hear it from the president himself. It's to me a false narrative. I'm just really bothered by all the leftism in the media, and how do you, Carlos, how do you, let's ask this since the question's up, how do Hispanic people educate themselves on the political process, on the presidential race, et cetera, because we're all suffering through the same thing, which is news that is crafted and pre, you know, it's like, they're like Twinkies, you know, we're being fed this stuff. And here Jorge Ramos is, maybe the biggest name in international Hispanic journalism.
No, I think you're right. So, you know, I think there are a couple of things at issue here. Just to get to your question regarding Hispanics and the way they filter through media, I think that's actually a very sensitive question and one that's not easily answered because, as you probably know, my father's generation and lots of generations of Latinos since really enjoy AM radio. So here we are on AM radio, and this is where you would find a huge demographic of Latinos listening, but they're going to listen to Spanish language radio.
Right.
So, Kelly, if you were just to canvas Spanish language radio in this country, they have raised this issue and portrayed conservatives as Latino haters, and that it's the Democratic Party that is the party that is kind and compassionate. And I'm very concerned that this narrative has penetrated a group of Latino voters that has led to this swing to where, you know, the current president received somewhere around 70% of the Hispanic vote,
mm-hmm.
where not that, you know, not that long ago, George Bush was able to garner a fair amount of Hispanic votes. And it was Reagan who said that every Hispanic in America is a Republican. They just don't know it yet. So I am concerned about how that shifts, and I'm hoping that Hispanics will go beyond the AM radio dialogue, if you will, and really dig into the news for themselves.
Well, and I think that the heart issues for Hispanics, classically the family and
yes.
Economics, jobs and stuff, those are bread and butter issues for the Republicans.
They are. There's no question. And it's funny because education has now for about 4 years been the most important issue for Hispanics in America. I think I told you last time I was on the show, Kelly, that in 2013, the fall of 20, a higher percentage of Hispanics went to college or university than whites. And that was also repeated in 2014. We don't have the figures yet for 2015. You know.
Amazing.
So it's quite clear that Hispanics understand the value of education. And that should be, again, another strong issue for conservatives. But I think when you're hearing things like cutting Pell Grants and other issues, that if you don't see the bigger picture, it's easy for Latinos to see, you know, conservatives as somehow anti-Hispanic.
Very, very, very well said. All right. So what do you think the big issues? Let's come back. I got to take a break here, but let's come back.
Sure.
I'll ask you what the big issues are as far as you are concerned in this election cycle, especially what your opinion on the presidential race is. Folks, it is 6:15. We're talking to Carlos Campos, president of Ashland University in Ashland, Ohio, and who is Carlos is Hispanic. He's Cuban, of Cuban descent. And I figured it would be a good show to talk about this issue, especially we just had this almost brawl with Jorge Ramos and Donald Trump. And it's 16 on the button. Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. We'll be right back. 523-1450. I can't really take any calls right now, but 805-6180 if you want to text 805-6180, and we'll be right back.
If marching bands...
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes. How about you? Are we good?
Hello?
Can you hear me? Yeah. Can you hear me okay?
One of the reasons I went to break, your phone's breaking up.
Oh, man. Should I just call back on the same line?
Are you on a landline or a cell?
This is a cell. I can try landline.
Landline is probably the best way to do it.
All right. Let me try it back on the landline.
I think that'll be a lot better. Okay. Thanks.
All right.
Hey, we're back on?
Yeah, it's 10 times better.
Awesome. Great.
I'm playing a little clip here. Hold on. Jorge Ramos says America is our country. Let me see. Can you hear the clip?
No.
In the front page. That means
can you hear it now?
A lot to me.
Yes.
Of the New York Times, that's a lot. So it talks about the whole thing I had with the Spanish journalist, if you call him a journalist. I don't actually. He's an advocate for lots of things.
Well, that's one of the things I wanted to ask Univision Infusion anchor Jorge Ramos. He joins me now. Jorge, Donald Trump says you're an advocate, not a journalist. What's your response? Do you consider yourself to be an advocate?
I'm just a reporter.
Donald Trump says you're an advocate.
That's pretty funny. This guy's got to be like a Marxist. It makes you think that the journalism in the journalism in Mexico is very left.
Well, I think journalism in all of Latin America is pretty left. And maybe not just in Latin America. You know, I think there's some self-selection in the media, period.
Yeah, absolutely.
Present company accepted.
Hopefully excluded.
Yeah.
All right, so... I'm trying to see if we can get this clip. We're on in about 10 seconds.
Okay, great.
Okay, who is
? 620 Kelly here, and it's around 70 degrees out there. I've got Carlos Campo on the line. We're talking about the Hispanic vote, the views of Hispanic voters in this cycle. I've got a little bit of this clip, and I'm going to play this just to set the table on this. The conversation that we've been having, this is between Donald Trump and Jorge Ramos, who was at one of his press conferences and spoke out of turn to ask a series of questions, which really sounded like more of a statement. But here we go anyway.
Next. Yeah, please. Excuse me. Sit down. You weren't called. Sit down. Sit down. Sit down. No. Go back to Univision. Go ahead.
You cannot deport 11 million.
Go ahead.
You cannot deport 11 million people. You cannot build a 1900
go ahead.
Wall. You cannot deny citizenship to children in this
sit
country.
Down, please.
Those ideas
You weren't called. Go.
All right, so he then goes on and asks his question. You can't deport these. It was the same thing. You can't deport 11 million people, can't deny birthright citizenship. This is, and you know, you can't build the wall. It's impossible. What I find strange, though, Carlos, in this particular exchange is this gentleman who's obviously he's Mexican. He works for this gigantic Mexican TV conglomerate, states that we can't change birthright citizenship. That to me is an outrageous idea. I mean, is the average Hispanic in America or Mexican going to support him on these things, though?
Well, I don't know that, you know, Ramos really speaks for Latinos in America. And, you know, this issue of birthright citizenship goes beyond Hispanics, of course. You know, the boy, when you think about the folks who would be affected by such a change now, you know, of course, America has the right to make its laws and make changes that they feel are appropriate to the country. But I think if we're headed in the direction where we are looking at shifting birthright citizenship as a nation, I hope that's not the direction we're headed. I don't think it's the right direction for the country. And, you know, let's face it, Trump has sued Univision for $500 million. Yeah. Ramos is never going to get called on. He knows that. So he took a shot. And I think he crossed the line.
Carlos, that's he came
not,
back.
You know, he's not a journalist at that point, and I think Trump crossed the line. You don't treat another human being the way he was saying, you know, sit down. You know, you don't say that to a child. And his whole demeanor didn't seem presidential to me.
Carlos, he came. He allowed him to come back and ask his questions immediately afterwards.
Well, he locked him out for 10 minutes, and I don't know. I think he realized that politically it would have been suicide to not let him back in. But again, to say sit down, go back to Univision, to me, it's less than presidential. I think it's one of the fatal flaws that Mr. Trump has. I don't think he has a presidential demeanor, really a demeanor for someone who I would have deep respect for as a leader. I think you have to be deferential and certainly firm. I think he could have been firm, but this whole idea of sit down, and didn't call on you, just his tone to me seemed less than professional or presidential.
But a lot of people will say, well, Obama's got the demeanor, but he doesn't have the substance. At least Donald's got the substance. What do you say to that?
Well, I think there's no question that Trump has tapped into a sort of visceral pulse for America. You know, Kelly, I was in D.C. Gosh, I'm trying to think how long ago it was. You probably recall when Glenn Beck went to D.C. and basically just he had this call not too many years ago and just said for Americans to come. And if you drill down and say, you know, what was Beck really asking people to support or what was the cause? I would suggest that not one in 20 Americans could tell you what it was. But I was there and it was palpable. And there were at least 200,000 people who literally came simply based on a call. I think it's that same visceral thing that Trump has tapped into. Americans want change. Trump is calling for change and has tapped into that. But I don't know that it's cohered around a clear strategy and philosophy moving forward.
How about this? And this is something that Pat Buchanan gave in trying to remember what it was, the 1992 a presentation to the before the election to the national convention, the GOP. And he basically said there is an American ethos. There's an American philosophy that transcends political theory. And it's identifiable through certain beliefs. And I believe that that's what's happening here is there's certain ideas that number one, America shouldn't be pushed around. Number two, America shouldn't enter into questionable or asinine agreements with other countries if we don't have to. Freedom of speech, freedom of religion, the right to have a strong military, the need not to be talked down to by the leadership, the idea that we're special. And I think you can go to history and support all these things. I'm not saying they're true or they're false, but I think there's, you know, the fact that we got involved in World War I, then World War II, not because it was defensively necessary, but because we help out the underdog, you know, the smaller, you know, we push back against bullies, and we help create this new world through the United Nations and through the Bretton Woods agreement that made the dollar the world anchor currency, and all these different things, that we are the most generous nation. We're giving out more humanitarian aid, that we fight for democracy and all these things. I think in some level, people feel like we're losing this, and what it's being exchanged for is a handful of magic beans. People feel like Obama doesn't like them, that what he stands for, to the extent that they can understand it, is either retrograde or it's some level of revolution that is going to harm America and it's not going to help the world. They're alarmed by that. And political correctness has blanketed the land where nobody can stand up to these things. And I think Trump is seen as a guy that's not afraid to push back. He shoots from the hip, and more often than not, they identify and agree with what he says.
Right. No, he is the absolute antidote to political correctness, which is anathema to me personally and professionally. So I would agree with that completely. And I absolutely believe that our nation is fed up with leaders who, frankly, are afraid to answer the simplest question. And part of that is we have become so politically correct that we've almost lost the sentiment, a core of who we are as Americans. So from that perspective, I think that Trump, absolutely, the fact that he's not scripted, is not a politician, at least, not a career politician, I think those are very appealing to lots of Americans.
Now, what about this bizarre claim? Maybe it's not bizarre, but it strikes me as weird. I was thinking about this last night, Carlos, that this Jorge Ramos gets up and says, this is our country. And I thought, well, what does that mean? And I think what it means is America really is a special place. America is really all of those things, or a lot of those things that we claim to be, and that the rest of the world has set its sights on us, identifies with us, and then demands that we live up to this.
That's a very interesting thought. I would like to believe that America in some ways does continue to hold up a moral standard for the entire world. But I think Latin Americans, you know, just using that term, they see America as part of that phrase, Latin America,
yeah.
And they live in the Americas. If they're in South America or Central America, this is America. They have often sensed an affinity with America. You know, I think the most radical folks in the country who are Hispanics would even say that there were shifts in the border that occurred some time ago that were really much more about imperialism than they were about rights. And so if you shift those borders back, suddenly, you know, Hispanics account for a greater part of our country. I should say, you know, those borders would be shifted back. You know, I don't agree with that philosophy. But again, this whole idea of some people saying, don't tell me to go back to my country because this is my country. I don't think Ramos was declaring that. I think he was drilling down to the idea that the things that America feels most strongly about, Latinos agree with. You mentioned them, faith and family and freedom.
All right. Well, we need to take another break here. What do you want to come back and talk about? I mean, it's kind of an amorphous question, what's going on in the Hispanic community, but what's on your mind when you're thinking about the Hispanic vote this cycle?
Right. Well, one of the things that maybe we could talk about, I think it's clear that the Republican Party realizes that 2016 is not going to be a swing election regarding immigration or the Hispanic vote, but 2020 will be, and 2024 and every election after. So perhaps we could spend a few minutes on that.
Okay. And folks, we'll take a little break here talking to Carlos Campo, and wanted to get his input on, it's to me a fascinating election cycle, especially with how Trump is taking on really Mexico and the border policy, and some of their biggest players have come out swinging against him, and he's pushing back. So I think it is a time of change, possibly for American policy, but it's certainly bringing a lot of focus on the border. It's 6:31. It's about 70 degrees out today. It won't be quite 100 today. About 95, and we're going to be talking in just a moment about what was just mentioned. So. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. Be right back.
Now.
Can you hear me?
I'm with you. Is that a better connection?
Yeah. Is the advertising playing in the background?
I don't hear it now.
Oh, okay. All right. So, well, it's kind of an interesting interaction, to say the least.
Yeah, I like that idea of, this idea that America, the America that Ramos is referencing, really is this moral America that really has become an international standard and something that other nations aspire to.
Well, what else could he possibly be referring to? America as a standard, America as the dream, America as
right.
The country that's always on the spot to do the right thing. Notice we don't even have a conversation about why Mexico doesn't do the right thing to help out. We don't even bring that up.
Well, and I do think that should be part of the conversation. You know, you do hear a lot of economists and others talk about the fact that Mexico can do a lot more to encourage economic development within its own country, which by its very nature would decrease the desire to cross the border.
Well, not only that, but, all of this populism, this Peronism and Marxism, socialism is what causes these people to want to cross the border, because, you know, with socialism, it's not just a lack of an economy, it's also a loss of the rule of law.
No question. And of course, that's where most of the illegal immigrants are coming from now. It's really not Mexico at all. It's really more Central America, and these are the nations that are just imploding because of the very issues you mentioned.
Yeah, well, what do you definitely want to get into? We got a half an hour left.
Yeah, I'm thinking, this whole idea of how will the Republican Party respond to the demographic shift? I think the Republican Party has, this is not going to be a swing election, Kelly. And so I think they're dismissing, certainly Trump is dismissing the Hispanic vote this time around. But if the Republican Party does not respond to this demographic shift and help people understand why Republican ideas or conservative ideas are better ideas, then I think they're really in. We're all in for a very difficult time frame for America.
Well, it's possible that Trump will soften his rhetoric a little bit as he has gained in the polls and also begins to teach, because he's a guy that could probably have a lot to offer in terms of instruction about the free markets and that type of thing.
Oh, no question. I mean, that's where his strength really lies. So I think he has a lot to teach in that regard.
What are you hearing about him? Pretty negative stuff?
Yeah, I think overall, people feel as though August is always a very slow month as things ramp up for the following year. I think people do believe that because Trump is so unfettered in his dialogue, it's just a matter of time before he buries himself. But a lot of others who are saying, he's tapped into something have some staying power.
Carlos, we're on, but he could be. I'm going to ask you a question.
Sure.
That you might find shocking. It is 6:35, and we've got Carlos Campo, my good friend on the line. And I've got a question for you. We're talking about Trump burning himself out or making a gaffe that he can't even overcome. But what if he's like Godzilla? When the planes and the tanks come to blow him up, he only gets stronger.
I'm just trying to get that picture out of my head. Trump, swatting away these tanks and planes coming at him. I think it'll be interesting to see how all of that shakes out. I guess one of the things I'm deeply concerned about regarding Trump is just his personal ethos. I don't see him as a man who feels like he has a lot to learn as a human being, a humility in him. He is brilliant. He is a force to be reckoned with, a man from a fiscal perspective that understands business. And I don't know him well, but the little that I've seen, if a person is not open to learn, I just feel like Donald Trump believes he literally has the overriding opinion about almost any topic that he'd like to discuss. And I think that's my deepest concern about his viability as a president long term.
Who was the guy in the Bible that got up on top of his castle and was looking around and then what a great... Was it Nebuchadnezzar? Or?
Yeah, I was thinking Ozymandias, but that's not from the Bible.
No, that's from... what's his face?
That's Shelley. One of the romantics.
I met a traveler from an antique land. So, yeah. So anyway, so well, maybe he'll go crazy and end up, in a field with cattle, Nebuchadnezzar. but he's got the hair for it. He's got a hair that's grown out like eagle's feathers. But all right. So let me just ask you this: is there a way for a Donald Trump or maybe a candidate that's a lot more moderate to pull Latinos onto into the movement this time? What if Donald Trump got rid of this kind of crazy New York, you push me once, I'll push you twice back? What if he got into the meat and potatoes of capitalism and why it's the only way forward, why it's the foundation of democracy?
Well, I think that would appeal to a broad swath of Americans, including some Hispanics. You look at the entrepreneurism that's inherent in a lot of Latin Americans. They would respond to that issue. Jobs are critical for all Americans, including Hispanics. So I think that's really a smart option for him. And I think overall, Kelly, it's the idea that are conservative ideas better than liberal ideas for the future of our country? I'm starting to see some effort among conservatives to really educate the public regarding that. I think that's the way forward, and I think that's something Trump should look at.
All right. So how do you approach Hispanic? What's a way to approach someone out of that community that would be, do you think that would be beneficial or would be practical in terms, a lot of people coming out of Mexico, for example, have seen that the government has this, it's inefficient. There's a lot of corruption. And also, right, there's not the rule of law. So how do you communicate with someone who maybe doesn't have training in legal thinking the way that we approach things?
Well, I think there are two methods to do that. I think one really is through education. That's one of the things I've already alluded to. The Hispanics see the critical importance of education. And even within their own countries, a lot of folks say, well, gosh, most Mexicans, for instance, will drop out of school 7th, 8th, or 9th grade. That's not because they don't have a longstanding commitment to education. It's really more about the exigency of their family status where they must do that. So I think that as we see that importance of education growing is a huge component. And I also think this idea of the work ethic, Kelly, that was something that was deeply embedded in our country for years and years and years. And I think it is a Protestant work ethic that many Latinos share. And I think that's another area where you say to a Latino, we have an opportunity to get you to work in a place where if you work hard, you can better yourself and your family. That's something that will appeal strongly to Hispanics as well. And I think as America shows that its system of government and education can provide opportunity that they wouldn't have had in their home country, you'll see this whole American ethos come full circle within the Latino community.
All right. So I've got this vision in my mind now. The Roman Empire was originally run by, obviously, Italians.
Right.
And they even had programs. I think it was called Alimenta, that what they supported Italian children to make sure that there was stock for future leaders. But as the Roman Empire plays out, increasingly foreigners come and run the empire, and they become some of the most ablest leaders. And I'm wondering, is that going to happen to America as you have this demographic shift? Is the leadership of America going to pass from this Anglo class over to the Hispanic class?
Well, I think it's a fascinating question. I think that if you look at first-generation immigrants, not just Hispanics, but others as well, there is a real desire. I mean, look at Middle Easterners, even a number of African nations as well. First-generation immigrants are doing remarkably well in business and in leadership. So I think it really is more about an immigrant spirit and this desire and a knowledge. I've come from a nation. I've come from a place, wherever that was, to a new place of opportunity, and I'm not going to miss this opportunity. And I'm going to give up on, you know, the Anglo core of our nation to say that they're simply going to go the way of, you know, the elites and of France in the 18th century. I think there is an opportunity for all of us still as Americans to come together and understand that, you know, even these first generation immigrants, Kelly, I don't see them reframing who we are in terms of philosophy. You know, that is happening in France and other places. I don't see that in America. I think people assimilate very well here.
This statement that we were talking about this off the air too, the statement by Jorge Ramos, this is our country. America in some way around the world represents liberty, represents capitalism and human rights.
Right.
So all of these things that people value from around the world and aspire to, obviously people are fighting and risking their lives to get in here, that image is going to be burned into the minds of a lot of immigrants stronger than it is the people that live here.
I agree. You know, if you were to pick 10 countries at random and say, what do they stand for as a country, as a nation? What do they stand for? What is it that holds them together? How difficult would that be? I mean, we would say some very specific things about America, and I hope it's not just because we're ethnocentric, but think about how much more difficult that would be to talk about any other country and say, these are the 3, 4, 5 values that form the foundation of that nation. It's much more difficult. So I think that is one of the things that's enduring about our nation. And my hope, of course, is that will remain very strong in the years to come.
Well, in Russia, one of the themes is bare-chested leaders wrestling bears.
That's a fundamental value, huh?
Yes, it is. All right, folks, let's take a little break here. We got Carlos Campo. What are we going to talk about when we come back? We got about 15 minutes left.
You know, I'm ready to shift to bare-chested bear wrestlers if you want. Anything that's on your mind.
I was going to say as long as they're female. But, why don't we talk a little bit about education? You just got this placement in this university as the president. Why don't we talk about Hispanics and education and what you see as some of the trends and some of the challenges? Folks, AM Las Cruces on AM 1450, the Kelly O'Connell Show, 523-1450. Can't call in right now, but 805-6180 if you have a statement or question, and we will be right back with Carlos Campo. Hold on one second. I got something else playing in the background.
Okay.
Are we getting into what you wanted to?
No, this is great for me. I just like being on the air. It's good to respond to those kinds of questions. And I think, you know, you never know where Bennett's going to go, but I think he's going to ask a lot of these same kinds of things.
Well, I think that, you know, I found it absolutely fascinating that you said that there's more Hispanic by percentage going for higher education. It's like, you know, we've seen Hispanics as people who want to come in to the country and survive.
Take advantage.
You know, that's the media. The media is telling us that the Hispanics just want to get in here and have a comfortable life. And really, sounds like they're challenging the Asians in terms of their kind of aggressiveness in education.
Right. When you look at what shifted in 10 years, that's an under 10-year shift, which is just
that's
unheard
incredible.
Of. In about 8 years, the dropout rate has been cut in half in high schools in America, the Hispanic dropout rate. I mean, that just doesn't happen. The African-American dropout rate's been static over that same period. Hasn't changed really at all. So those kinds of changes are extraordinary, and I think it does point to the fact that Hispanics are seeing that the American dream is paved, through education.
Hard work and education.
No question.
When are you coming on the show?
I'm on with Bennett on September 3rd. I think it's a Thursday.
How big is that show? How far around does it reach?
You know, it is coast to coast. I don't know what the actual numbers are, but he's out there. He's in a lot of markets.
He's a brilliant guy.
I agree. You know, I guess this, you know, he admitted that he has a gambling addiction a couple of years ago. And he took a lot of heat for that. And I know personally that had to really kick him in the gut because he's been standing for virtue and standing for God for so long. But
we're back on. All right. So I'm here with Carlos Campo. He's the president of Ashland University. I've got a text here, Carlos. What does your guest think about the dual language in elementary schools? It is taking over LCPS, Las Cruces public schools. Here is an issue, Carlos, because as this, I think this presidency has really focused on multiculturalism and the fact that people don't need to melt into the melting pot, that you can keep your traditions and your language and everything. That fights against building a cohesive, e pluribus unum out of many come one, our old standard idea that people would learn English and everything.
Right. I think I read recently that we're far more pluribus than we are unum these days in America. And I think that's a reflection of what is reflected in our classrooms too, Kelly. And I would suggest, and, you know, maybe I'm from a different school of thought, but it is absolutely true that our nation needs to cohere around a cultural thread that is our language. And if you look at the most effective dual language programs in the nation, bar none, they were actually in Dade County, Florida. And instead of doing what we're doing in almost every classroom in America today, and that is allowing a set apart, if you will, a second language area for Spanish speakers, there's a way to blend the classroom so that English speakers can improve their Spanish. So I'm talking about especially the youngest kids can improve their Spanish and continue to learn their English at a high rate. Instead, what we find is we are dragging down English speaking kids in so many classrooms because of our approach, instead of blending in a fashion where it works for both languages, but also then we have 17, 18, and 60 and 70-year-olds trying to learn Spanish because of demographic changes in their area. It's completely wrongheaded, and there's no question that Hispanics want to learn English. They should learn English. It should be, from my perspective, an absolute demand that we make of citizenship. It's one of the things that does hold us together as a nation, but that doesn't change the fact that we need to teach our languages differently, especially in K-3.
Yeah, now Carlos and I have both lived in Miami, not at the same time, but, you know, there's this kind of disconcerting. You're driving through Hialeah, which is like the capital of Cuban America, and that in Cayocho. And there's so many places you stop and you want to buy something or whatever, ask a question. The people simply don't know any English.
Any English.
They've
at
been
all.
Living there for decades. I mean, that's the kind of thing we want to avoid.
I agree, and I think you would find those pockets, and they would be for other language speakers as well. And you'll find pockets like that throughout the nation. But Miami has become so metropolitan. You know this. I mean, obviously, there are pockets in Hialeah and elsewhere where it's Spanish only, and folks really haven't assimilated the language. But it's rare in Miami and elsewhere. And I think, again, part of it is, as you say, a mindset. And I think that there is a strong mindset. I can tell you it is rampant in the Hispanic community. It's very rare that a Hispanic person says, I don't want to learn English. I shouldn't have to learn English. My language is Spanish. I'm going to stick with it.
All right. I've got another text here. Mr. Campo makes some excellent points. How does he stand on the dilemma of the illegal immigrants already here and the issue of anchor babies? This has become a huge deal, Carlos. Mm-hmm. And what I want to ask you about is, from this question, the law, should the law be enforced? Should it be thrown out? Should it be ignored? And anchor babies. Now we need to take a break, folks. So let's take one more break and we'll come back and answer that question. You're listening to AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, the Kelly O'Connell Show, 523-1450 normally, but we've only got one line working on this puppy over here. So 805-6180 is the text line. If you have any questions, we're going to come back and finish up with Carlos Campo. He's the president of Ashland University in Ohio. And from my perspective, they're lucky to have him, but we'll be right back at 6:51. So, we got to mention when you're going on this other show.
Okay, that would be great.
I'd like to get out there for that inauguration.
Oh, man, we would love it. It would just be phenomenal if you could come out for that. It's be a fun time of year. The whole family will be here. You'll be able to check in with everybody, and that would really be phenomenal.
That'd be great, man. I saw pictures of the Ohio River. I couldn't believe how big it looked. Where's the water come from?
I think a lot of that is Canadian water, but I could be wrong, Joey.
It must be coming out of the Great Lakes.
That makes sense, right?
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, I'm on with Bennett at 7:30 a.m. Eastern, and then, of course, it's recorded for other time zones. So let's see when he's on in Las Cruces. I should check that.
Is he broadcast here?
I think so. I'm going to find out in a minute.
I'll Google it myself.
Morning in America.
I don't think it is broadcast here.
Maybe not.
But he could get it. You could get it online, couldn't you?
Oh, yeah. BillBennett.com. Let's see, find a station.
The find a station doesn't open up into anything.
No, it doesn't. I've got a 9 o'clock meeting here, so I'll probably have to jump off like a couple minutes before then.
Okay.
Thanks. Yeah, I don't see it. Oh, let's see. No, I don't. Oh, Artesia, New Mexico?
Is that hours away from here. How about El Paso?
KSVP 990 AM in Artesia.
All right. Okay, so we've got Carlos Campo here, and we're going to take a break at the hour, and then we're going to have J.R. Hernandez and his attorney to come in and talk about this case against the county. But, okay, Carlos, you're being asked about the law, the anchor babies, and the people that are here. Trump is threatening to throw them all out of the country and make them, I guess, like Jorge Ramos, wait 10 minutes before they come back. What do you think?
Well, I think it's one of these leadership issues, Kelly, that to me has been very difficult as an American to watch 10 years or more of just stasis in D.C. where we've done nothing. I think Americans have really come to the point where we're ready for a change. The fact that Reagan was the last, politician with gumption to say we're going to do something about this. Of course, the changes he had pushed for were watered down. But I think it's clear something has to happen. And I think this, again, this idea that let's pull people out of the shadows, require them to pay fines. Some of them will, of course, have to be deported because of their criminal record. Others may have to do jail time to pay, based on other issues. Pay a fine, perhaps do jail time, get tamper-proof ID cards for every worker in America. That's so easy to do, Kelly. This is not rocket science. Make it a felony. Every time an employer employs someone who's illegal, all of a sudden you dry up that entire wellspring. Those are the simple changes that I think Americans overwhelmingly support. Find a way for folks to come out of the shadows into the system so that we don't have families split apart. We don't have America still fighting with 11 million people somewhere in our communities. We know who they are, where they are. Let's begin that change now. Let's really force the politicians to take action on this, whomever is in the White House in 2016.
All right. And so what do Mexico and Mexicans have to gain by this?
I think Mexico has to be responsible for, what has become a huge remittance system. They are, of course, gaining billions of dollars for remittances that are sent back from people who are in our country illegally. There is a very little incentive for Mexico, for these laws to change. And all the more reason why America should take action on their own. We have elected leaders. They've done absolutely nothing but argue about why they can't get it done. They don't trust the president. You know, I get it. But at some point, we have to take action and begin to make changes to an immigration system that is hopelessly broken.
Okay. Shifting one last time here, you got to get off the phone, but
yeah.
What, and I've got here's one last question. We are okay. Are you Hispanic or Latino? Your people have shown little desire to assimilate, a sense of entitlement, and will to ignore the rule of law. We are not responsible for Mexican people. I mean, the fact of the matter is, no matter what you think of immigrants, they're not going to be kicked out of the country. So, you know, we have to make the best of it. And if they're willing to work and be part of this team, let's go for it. Education in with Latinos, just 1 minute on that, if you don't mind.
Well, I think what we're seeing is so many Latinos getting to college or university. Unfortunately, they're not prepared, Kelly. So I talked about huge percentages going there, but very few are graduating with a degree. Much like half the percentage that their white counterparts are graduating with. So I think this idea of preparing more effectively, demanding more from the classroom, and that's for every classroom, every student, regardless of color, ethnic background, et cetera. Those are starting points. It's not going to be easy to do, but that's where it has to begin.
Okay. And you're going to be on the Bill Bennett Show, which is Morning in America. When are you going to be on that?
7:30 a.m. Eastern. It's rebroadcast throughout the country. You can also go online, of course, to BillBennett.com and check it out.
What day?
That's Thursday, September 3rd.
Thank you for coming on, Carlos. I know you got to run,
thanks,
very interesting. Thanks. Have a good day. All right, folks, and you know this show is always available on Blog Talk Radio, and we have a call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
It's Ralph Kelly. Carlos gave a politician's answer. Do you deport or do you not deport?
That's a great question.
Yes or no?
That's a great question. He's gone, so that's a great question. We're about to run out, but how would you solve it?
No, I said it before. No, I would not deport the child. American citizen, I would deport the mother out of the hospital
Wow.
and back to Mexico.
Wow.
Period. Child should be put up for adoption because he would be given a better life than what he
yeah,
would have in
Ralph,
that hellhole of Mexico.
Ralph,
end of conversation.
How many mothers are going to make that choice if they find out that's the possible outcome? It's going to really cut down on the number of women who come here. Thanks for the call. All right, folks, we're going to come back and talk to, if they show up, RJ and Hans Voss to talk about this lawsuit, and it's pretty interesting stuff, suing the county because the firing of RJ and claim that it's against his work rights. So we're going to talk to them in a minute. If they don't, for some strange reason, show up, then we'll just go ahead as we always do and plow into this. There's a lot of stuff to talk about. What do you think about Jorge Ramos claiming that this is our country? He's kind of speaking about the whole world, isn't he? We'll be right back after the break on the hour. What do you see on that? That's probably the only place that he can answer. So this lawsuit's kind of exciting. It's 7:06 TGIF. Thank goodness it's Friday. Kelly O'Connell. And Kelly O'Connell, author and attorney. And we've got RJ Hernandez in the studio, and he has filed a lawsuit. I've got his attorney as well in the studio, and his attorney is a friend of mine, Hans Voss. And the the issue here is, what is the lawsuit about in general? I know you guys can't talk about specifics because it's going in front of the judge, and there's certain things that we can't really get into. But can you just describe the general lawsuit?
So generally, the lawsuit comes from retaliatory action that was taken against RJ at work on two different occasions, really. First, precipitating from some statements he made about being interested in running for the position of county clerk. So there's a First Amendment issue there, freedom of association. Then there was some retaliation that took place. And as part of that, RJ was approached to become involved in some illegal activity. Being uncertain whether or not that was part and parcel of the retaliation that had begun as part of the, retaliation against him for having stated he wanted to run for office, he very carefully considered the situation, spoke, got information about what was going on, and then went to law enforcement with it. Shortly thereafter, he was fired. It's my understanding that the individuals who were participating in the illegal activity are actually on paid leave. That may be dated information at this point, but it's certainly one time that was true.
Which is somewhat shocking. I mean, you know, if you go into the workplace and shoot people, you're not put on paid leave.
That's right.
But I mean, if you go in and you steal IDs or are involved in that, you're allowed to go on paid leave. That is somewhat bizarre to me.
It seems certainly out of kilter in my understanding of the way things should work as well. And in response, Mr. Hernandez was terminated. Additionally, then, there's been some statements about whether or not that termination was appropriate under the facts, et cetera. So we've got some defamation claims because it's our feeling, and that we'll be able to prove without any question, that RJ was a longstanding employee of the county. There's been some discussion that perhaps he's a temporary employee. However, he's held these kinds of temporary positions for right around 20 years. The work that he did there is about organizing elections, and he's done good work there over the years.
So he's a permanent temporary employee in a sense.
Sort of, you know. And so then the idea that he's terminated, I think, 4 days after the final set of arrests, I think is pretty telling.
And it seems like, well, one of the things that the law asks for is causation, that you can see one thing caused another. And it would seem that this is not an accidental firing, at least to the average person who we assume is going to be in the jury box, that it's going to be, when it's presented to them, whistleblowing happened. And then it seems like, as always happens in these cases, the whistleblower somehow finds himself or herself unemployed.
That's right.
So, RJ, so, you know, when you were fired, did it feel like at the time, you know, the penny had, or the other shoe had dropped? Did it just have the sense of payback?
It did. Being called up to the office, and I thought I was going to be congratulated and for a job well done in bringing out the identity theft, and it turned out I was just being taken upstairs so I could be terminated. So,
okay. So, could you? Some of the people may not listening may not be aware of what the general description of what happened at the county clerk's office was. Could you kind of recount that for people?
Yeah, I was approached to take part in part of a criminal activity that was going on, which was cashing of federal income tax checks. Were fraudulently obtained, and I was also asked to seek notaries. And well, the notaries there, we have notaries in the clerk's office, and Maria herself, Maria Cenicetos herself, asked the notaries to notarize the documents without the person actually being there.
And that tipped you off a little bit.
Correct.
Okay, so when this stuff was going on and you were kind of doing your job, before you found out that there was something that was amiss that you were invited to take part in this illegal activity? Did it seem like the office in general was being well run, well managed?
It lacked a lot of supervision. I'll say that it lacked a lot of supervision. It lacked a lot of professionalism due to the isolation I was facing, the work conditions I was forced to be in.
And you had mentioned before that when you came on before that you had seen or maybe you had heard that when Lynn Ellens came in that he would often draw up a chair and grab a laptop or whatever and start surfing the internet.
Yes,
that was his go-to move when he came in.
Correct.
That is weird. Well, and of course, as a just thinking through this as an attorney, I'm just wondering at what point this interest in running the place would implicate him in these things. I'm not asking you, of course, but just for people to think about. I mean, he was mentioned as a person who didn't come into the office all the time. How often do you, if you had to guess, just based on your gut?
Well, that office was a very relaxed run office.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just say that much. It was very relaxed. So their appearance was maybe 3 days out of the week.
And it was Scott Crayfish that was kind of calling the shots. Was that his name?
Yes, he was calling the shots.
And we do have a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
Max.
It's Max or
Marks?
Marks. All right. Karl Marx or another Marx?
Another Marx.
What's going on, Marx?
Well, you know, we got Mr. Hernandez out there saying, trying to act like he's a hero. Isn't Mr. Hernandez a convicted felon?
I don't know anything about his background.
Well, I've heard rumors that he's a convicted felon from back in the 1980s.
All right, Marx, and anything else?
Well, no, I just wanted to see if he would confirm that or deny that.
No, I'm not.
Okay, I've heard that. I just wanted to find out if that was true or not. So he's on the record now saying no. That's all I needed to know. Thank you very much.
Marx, which southern state are you from?
From Alabama.
Welcome to Las Cruces. Thanks for the call.
Thank you very much, sir.
All right. Sounds like a real southern gentleman there, or maybe he's not a gentleman. But anyway, folks, so we've got RJ, who I'm eventually going to change his name to JR, Hernandez in the studio with Hans Voss, an old friend of mine. And we're talking about this lawsuit here. There's a lot of rumor and innuendo flying around. And remember, when it comes to the courtroom, it's just the stuff that you can either prove outright or you can show were likely to have happened that's going to influence the jury or the is it a jury trial or is yeah
it is a jury
absolutely trial. And got Hans Voss here, who formerly the president of the State Bar Association.
That's correct. In 2012
you survived that.
I did survive that.
Okay. All right, folks, we'll take a little break here on the Kelly O'Connell Show, and 7:15, and we will be right back. Seven 19. We've got RJ Hernandez here, and just a little weather update for you. 69 degrees now, high of 96, low of 68, and getting a little bit cooler. Okay, so RJ, let me ask you this: when there was this, when you had contacted the authorities and had been talking to them, and then there was obviously a certain period of time when there's an investigation, and then there was a police showed up at the building, and what was that like?
Well, it was I knew it was going to happen. I didn't know that the whole staff would be locked out of the county clerk's office, but we got there. I got there about 7:30, as I did every day. And then as employees arrived, we were all locked out of the entire clerk's office.
Even Lynn Ellen's DeGeneres was locked out?
Yeah, everybody was locked out, and they had concerns of why everybody's codes were blocked out. And about 8:05, the sheriff's department walked up and started escorting people to their workplaces and asking them to gather their personal belongings, and part of them walked away with them.
All right, and how many cops were there?
There was about 8 of them.
And was there any, I mean, like other county people or?
Yes, there was at the very beginning, there was a few detectives, a few deputies, and then Miss Julia Brown walked through.
Downtown Julia Brown.
Correct. And then during the time that Lynn was walking through the building, that's when the comment was made from him to me. And
what did he say?
Well, I couldn't clearly understand him, but he was very angered, and he had stated that either I was dead or I was next. He was just really angry because his staff was being arrested. And but I did try to contact the election supervisor, who was my direct supervisor. I tried to contact the chief deputy, Mr. Kraling, and I also texted Lynn, but his phone was off. And to give him heads up that this was going to take place Monday.
But you had already been pushed out of the inner circle.
Correct.
Excluded, expelled from the sanctum sanctorum. So what happened? How did you get pushed out of this circle?
I had filed several EEO complaints against Scott Kraling and other members of the staff for what I felt was retaliation towards me bringing to the fact that I was going to consider running.
Okay, so you had mentioned to Scott Kraling, who obviously you had seen the crayfish as a possible, I mean, that you didn't see him as opposed to you or an enemy of you.
No, we were actually on talking terms until I brought to his attention that I was going to seek the Republican nomination for the county clerk.
And then he turned on you.
And at that very moment, comments were made from him to me. And
What kind of comments was he? Was he threatening or muttering?
No,
or?
He was more saying how highly criticized the office was with my presence being there. I had been there 20 years, and I didn't.
It was all your fault.
Right. Yeah, you know, I had been serving the election process for 20 years, and not once was I ever criticized.
When Lynn Ellens was walking or staggering away, was there a yellow liquid that he was trailing?
No, I can't say that.
You can't say it, but it may be true. All right, so when you were threatened by Lynn, and Lynn Ellens, is he elderly? I mean, I've never met him. What is he like? I mean, I've heard he's a lawyer.
I believe he's a retired attorney. I'm not sure if he's still practicing law, but yes, he's an elderly gentleman.
And so when he threatened you, I mean, you're in a wheelchair and he's kind of standing above you, kind of towering over you, though. It must have been somewhat intimidating. If he either told you, I'm gonna get you, I'm gonna kill you, you're next. I mean, you're next on the block.
Well, it was a simple words. I'm not saying he came up and I'm gonna kill you. The words were either you're dead or he was just really angry. His face was red. He was pointing his finger at me, and I tried to get clarification of what he said. He looked around and saw, well, there's other people here. He couldn't say it again. You know, he wasn't gonna repeat it. But I asked him 3 or 4 times to clarify what he had said.
And what was his clarification?
He just shook his head up.
Did he go back in his room and surf the internet again?
No, he was escorting his staff out also.
All right. So it has been stated that not only is there was no knowledge of Mr. Lynn Ellens of this event, of these things, or Scott Kraling, not only no knowledge, but they I believe have put out the idea that they're not responsible, despite the fact that it happened on their shift. Is that the message that has been put out?
Yes, that's the message that's been put out. My personal opinion is this, is that if you're an elected official, you're responsible for your staff, their action, and everything else that takes place in that office.
Sure.
And they refuse to accept that responsibility or have made no apology to the public. Or especially to the young people born in that year age or in that that year group that their identities were compromised.
Absolutely. And so when this information came out, it wasn't really concern for the victims. It was self-preservation, right?
Yes, because I was standing there when they went up to one of the news people and asked them, you know, can you please say that we had nothing to do with it?
Uh-huh. So you say this is a loose-run ship. Did you ever see anybody, for instance, rolling home-rolled cigarettes in their cubicles?
No.
Did they play the Beatles over the loudspeakers? No?
No.
No, it wasn't that bad. All right, folks, we're talking to R.J. Hernandez. Now, when did this lawsuit go in?
The lawsuit was filed last week, I guess. It was served on the county this week.
All right, so the text of this is already out there. What do you think, Hans, some of the most troubling parts of the claim are?
Well, I think, you know, it's troubling that somebody who would bring to light this kind of criminal activity is terminated from their work. And so, you know, that's the thing that caught my attention the most. There's a lot of things that were going wrong over there in terms of their treatment of Mr. Hernandez. However, to terminate him after he brings this to light just seems, well, outrageous is the word we use in the lawsuit.
So, and I mean, you would think that, I mean, just out of common sense, they wouldn't have fired him just to avoid the appearance of retribution.
You would think so. And there's a lot of talk about whether or not Mr. Hernandez was a temporary employee. If he's temporary, you would think that they, you know, could weather the storm until such time as that temporary employment ends. It's clear this was an act of anger and retaliation.
Yeah. All right. So let's take a little break here. We'll come back and talk a little bit more about some of the stuff going on down at the county. But it has been. We have really been driven from pillar to post on these stories, and they say it's not over yet. And Kiki, I ran into Kiki Vigil, the sheriff, and he told me there are more, there's going to be more pennies to drop on this county situation, and that the sense is that you've roused a sleeping giant in Kiki, and he's out for revenge in terms of being pushed around. And anyway, we'll see if anything comes out of that. 728 AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, Kelly O'Connell Show, 523-1450 to call in, 805-6180. We'll be right back. All right, so 7:32. Thank goodness it's Friday. Kelly O'Connell here, author and attorney, and I've got RJ. He's talking about his lawsuit. RJ, there was just a lawsuit against the county that the county lost, and it was $1.2 million, something like that. Is that in any way, shape, or form related to what's happened to you?
Well, I think the conditions are both the same. I think we both suffered a similar situation. Once she filed a complaint, or once she brought a complaint up to notice, she was locked out of her system. She was.
Who was she? Just to let people know,
Kim Stewart.
And Kim Stewart, what was her job title?
I believe she was the EEOC investigator for the county.
All right. So, could you just give us a little bit of background on EEOC stuff in general?
EEOC officer there at the county to gate internally the complaints for that are filed against any other employee, such as myself. I filed a complaint due to the comment of being highly criticized, that the office was being highly criticized. I took it as discrimination. And so I filed a complaint, and once that complaint was done, I fell into the same category Ms. Stewart did. I was locked out of my system. Supervisors quit acknowledging me. Staff members were instructed
I believe
not to have communication.
The Amish call it shunning.
Correct.
All right. So EEOC, in case you're wondering, U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission is a federal agency that administers and enforces civil rights laws against workplace discrimination. The EEOC investigates discrimination complaints based on an individual's race, color, national origin, religion, sex, age, disability, genetic information, and retaliation for reporting, participating in, and or exposing a discriminatory practice. All right, so they've just lost one. Is this part of your lawsuit?
It's mentioned in the lawsuit. It's, I think, background for the lawsuit.
Now, the county has lost a lot of money in lawsuits. What's your feeling about that?
Well, I think that, as I stated this past commission, they have to realize that they can't investigate themselves and expect to find themselves guilty.
You know, right.
Kind of an impossibility.
Now, who was in, I guess the investigation was external for this, the sales of the ID and the county commission, but I just wonder, so are part of this lawsuit, Scott the Crayfish Crayling and the Lynn Ellen's DeGeneres, are they parties of this lawsuit?
Yes, they are.
So, and then obviously they're going to have an attorney to defend them that we're going to pay for.
Well, I believe the county attorney represents the entire party.
Thank goodness we increased our tax base.
Right.
So, all right. So, your overall sense of what's going on at the county or the county clerk's office, it was just kind of off the rails. Was it just, you know, I mean, how did it happen that a large number of county clerk employees ended up stealing IDs and selling them into individuals in Juarez, Mexico?
Well, I'm not sure how all that got started. I just know that I was approached to see if I wanted to take part in it.
But how did a culture like this exist down at that office? In your opinion, what led to it? If you had to guess.
If I had to guess, I think that the person that was actually doing it all was the lowest paid person in the office, even though she had a bachelor's degree. High school graduates were getting paid $5-6 more than she was.
Wow, that's got to hurt.
So, you know, she had been there quite a long time there and wasn't able to move up, and she wasn't part of that inner circle, so there was no promotions for her. And so I think she just sought a different avenue of revenue.
And from what I understand, there were hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not more, that were gained from these ID shenanigans.
Correct. I think it was quoted in the El Paso Times as over $1 million were cashed in a matter of 4 or 5 months.
Yeah, that's pretty good. All right. So anything else that... any other details that are of note in this case that, you know, does this case have anything to do with you being in a wheelchair, for instance?
No, I don't think I don't think that part of the discrimination came out. I think a lot of it came out more for my party and
your party affiliation, GOP.
Correct.
And, well, and this is a pretty strongly Democrat county, so it's kind of hard to push back. But it just makes you wonder how many lawsuits this county is going to have to go through before they start doing, seeing things a little differently, doing things a little differently.
You know, in Tuesday's commission meeting, they had mentioned like 8 other claims before they mentioned mine. And so I sat there and I was kind of shocked, you know.
Who are some of the other claims? Did you?
I didn't catch their names, but there was
eight other employees of the county.
I'm not sure if they're employees or just suits against the county, but it's, you know, just to sit back and see that all these suits are coming out, and in the past, the suits that have happened, you know, Ms. Stewart wasn't the only person. There was the suit of the janitorial staff. There was the suit of Mr. Ray Calderon, a good friend of mine. He had ended up suing the county for retaliation. The undersheriff himself had filed a a lawsuit and won against the county for the same reason.
And you have to wonder at some point if Kiki Vigil might feel like he needs to take out a lawsuit to get the payment and the equipment that he needs. His boys and the men and women working there are vastly underpaid compared to the city.
Correct. I'm a great supporter of Mr. Vigil. I think his agenda is to try to better the county itself by better pay for his staff. They've been underpaid for a long time, and you know he's trying to bring up the morale to better the law enforcement that he's responsible for. I'm a great supporter of what he's trying to do, and I applaud all his efforts. I've seen him battle the commission and
mm-hmm.
and go back and battle it over and over again.
He has fought, and he's had some legendary battles with Billy Golden Earring Garrett.
Correct.
And you can't get anything crazier than Wayne Hancock's claims that the county population doubled since 2007, when a quick look on Wikipedia would inform a person that it was 7 or 8%. So there's some very strange things going on in this county. Would you agree?
Correct. Well, with Mr. Hancock's comment that we doubled, he wasn't here in 2007.
He was in Florida.
Correct. So I don't see how he could sit there and say that we had doubled since then.
Well, and he's going back to Florida.
Correct. This is he did one term. And
well, he was kind enough to come from the first world of Florida over here and run the county for a while.
Yes, correct.
this is like colonial leadership, you know. All right, folks. Well, thanks for coming on, RJ. Really appreciate it. It's good to see you again, Hans, because I know you're relocated and we miss having you around.
It's good to see you, Kelly.
And we'll maybe get you back on again to talk about some of the developments in the case. Do we know when the case is coming up for, impaneling the jurors or when it's going to be heard?
It's only just been served, so we've still got some time before we get to even summary judgment. I would say that's the next big event on the horizon.
This could be a years-long case, though, right?
I expect a little more than that.
Wow. Got to have a little staying power for that. Kelly O'Connell, and we're grateful to have R.J. Hernandez and his very capable lawyer, Hans Voss. Hans, what's your phone number if anybody was looking for a representation in a similar case?
575-532-5047.
532-5047. 5047. Hans Voss. Folks, we'll take a break here at 7:41. Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 805-6180 to text. We'll be right back. So would I. All right, so there is the guy behind that lawsuit, and we'll see what happens to it. But interesting conversation. Here's some headlines for you. Moody neurotics more likely to be creative geniuses. 60% of psychology research cannot be replicated. Black Transgender Lives Matter activists disrupt event. In a related development, transgender porn is growing by leaps and bounds in popularity. All right, so at the center of this email thing with Hillary, she's at the center of the Clinton universe, and one of the questions out there is what she knew about the emails and how she was involved. Conversely, people do want to know and are very fascinated with whether she had a romantic relationship with Hillary, and perhaps we'll never know that. But one of the issues to people interested in that is whether there would be any support in the emails to reveal this. Looking for anything else? There's an amazing, if you get a chance to go to Google, or you can go to Drudge. It's on the left-hand side, but if you go to Google, there is something that they've got there. Butterflies in space, NASA beams back iridescent wings, and it's an amazing photograph that is almost impossible to describe, but it is just just absolutely amazing. And the colors in it are kind of pink and green, kind of sea green. And described as a cosmic butterfly, the Twin Jet Nebula is stunning. Few cosmic phenomena have such striking complexity and colors. The image captured by the Hubble Space Telescope reveals two shimmering lobes of material flowing away from a glowing binary star system. So some of this stuff that you see from the Hubble spacecraft or the Hubble telescope is so extraordinary that you think there must be a higher mind behind it. All right, some other stories for you. Mexico warns Texas not to refuse immigrants' babies' birth certificates. So, one of the things that's going on is that you've got particular states like Texas that are trying to stand up and fight back against some of the federal decisions. They fought back and pushed back against the gay marriage rules. I don't know what the issue is in Texas now, but I think they're allowing gay marriages, but they're trying to figure out a way to fight back against the incredible number of illegals that are crossing into Texas every day. And as you've heard before, a certain number of these people are criminals. So, and that's a real issue. Looking for more. So anyway, what do you think about this issue with the Trump and Jorge Ramos? Ultimately, do you think that Trump's going to be able to pull in enough Latinos to get elected? Because, it's a huge voting bloc in America. 7:48 and Kelly O'Connell Show. We will be back to talk about some of these issues to kind of finish up the show. You're listening to AM Las Cruces on AM 1450, 523-1450 to call in, 805-61-80 to text 805-6180. We'll be right back. All right, so I've got for you a couple of clips that I thought were interesting. Here is the Donald talking about he is an entertaining guy talking about John Kerry negotiating with the Iranians.
People that are smart. We have people that don't get it. Look at the deal we have with Iran. Look at this deal. It is going to, in my opinion, lead to an arms race, the likes of which there has never been. Countries are going to line up for nukes. You're going to have perhaps nuclear proliferation. You're going to see things that you have never seen take place in a short period of time. This is a deal that just the other day, it was determined after months. You ever see a deal take so long, too, by the way? The deal's been going on forever. They had our prisoners. We never asked for our prisoners. How about that? Look, having a deal is good. But we should have doubled and tripled up the sanctions and negotiated from strength. We could have done it so easy. Instead, we have Kerry that goes on bicycle races. He's in a bicycle race. He's 73 years old. 73 years old. And I said it the last time I spoke. I swear to you, I will never enter a bicycle race if I'm president. I swear. He's in a bicycle race. He falls, he breaks his leg. This is our chief negotiator. He's walking in. They're looking at him like, what a schmuck.
All right. So obviously, the Donald is not having any of the Kerry. John Kerry, it seems to me, has spent an enormous amount of time. He's either the world's most active guy or he's somebody who wants people to understand that he's very vital. He's very, very vital in that he is, he's always wind sailing. He's in bike races. You heard all that stuff. So He's, I don't know. I just have always kind of wondered about John Kerry, form over substance, you know. But I've got another little bit of a clip here for you. Let's take on this conversation between Megyn Kelly and Jorge Ramos and get his side of the thing in retrospect.
Now Jorge Ramos. He is chief news anchor for Univision and host of America with Jorge Ramos on the Fusion Cable Network. Jorge, welcome. Thank you very much for being here. So what is it like to be caught in the crosshairs of a billionaire presidential frontrunner?
Well, you know exactly how it feels. But before we start, let me just say that today is a really sad day for journalism, and my condolences to the families of the victims today in Virginia. You know, the only thing I wanted to do is to ask a question. Many weeks ago, I requested an interview with Mr. Donald Trump. I sent him a handwritten note with my cell phone. Instead of returning our phone calls or calling me, he published it online, and he just didn't want to give me an answer. However, there are many questions that we have on Mr. Donald Trump. How is he going to deport 11 million undocumented immigrants? Mm-hmm. How is he going to deny citizenship for the children of immigrants here? How is he going to build a 1,900-mile wall? So we needed answers, so we decided to go to Iowa, go to a press conference, and ask those questions. And clearly, Donald Trump didn't like my question, and then that's what happened. He tried to silence me, and in this country, you cannot do that. I'm a U.S. citizen, I'm an immigrant, I'm a reporter, and I have the right in this country to ask any question I want to whomever I want.
And he was suggesting you were looking for a confrontation, that you were rude to the other reporters in the room because you didn't wait your turn.
No, I follow my turn. Two reporters before me asked their questions, and then I said, I have a question on immigration, and nobody else said anything. He was ready to listen to my question, and as soon as I started telling him that it was impossible, because it's really his immigration plan is full of empty promises, that it is impossible to do what he's saying that he's going to do, he didn't like the question, and then he called on another reporter, mm-hmm. trying to make sure that I would stop, and he told me to sit down.
Well,
and,
let me ask
and
you this. So he's not a fan.
So I follow the rules, and he just didn't like the question.
Right. It's not unusual for a reporter to jump up
and
start questions.
Out of the room.
Yeah, this is like having people call in here, some certain individuals. This guy, in my opinion, Jorge Ramos is a self-important person, was outraged that he couldn't stand up any time in this press conference and just ask his question. And he refuses to admit that he didn't wait his turn. But let me ask you this. If his questions were so scary to Trump, why did Trump bring him back in, listen to his questions, and then answer them?
Okay. It's not unusual for a reporter to do what you did. I mean, that's clear. All the reporters
have said
that.
It happens all the time.
Let me ask you this, because he clearly is not a fan of yours and of Univision's, but it appears to be mutual. So in his defense, why would he want to engage with you when you are on the record as calling him the most hateful, mm-hmm. divisive figure running for president right now?
Well, because his words are dangerous and his ideas are extreme when it comes to immigration and when it comes to freedom of the press. I've been a journalist for 30 years, and I've never been ejected from any press conference anywhere in the world. Those are the things that you see in dictatorships, not in the United States of America.
I would have more sympathy for this guy, but he really seems like he's like a pretty boy. You know, he's like this guy that's like this super high profile journalist, anchor of this, like the world's biggest. I read somewhere that Univision was bigger than any other. Maybe I'm mistaken, but I'll have to do a little research on that. But certainly one of the best known journalists in the world, pretending that he's a beat reporter. And he gets thrown out of a room because he just was asking hard questions when everybody listening to it saw that he stood up, refused to wait his turn, kept talking. And when he was asking questions, he wasn't asking questions. He was doing commentary. So anyway, my prediction is that Trump is going to at some point begin to soften his rhetoric on this stuff. But if we do address immigration as, you know, seriously address it as an issue, don't we have to at some point enforce the law? I mean, no matter what country you've come from, don't we have to enforce the law because of the fact that what's going on right now is not working? They're not attempting to enforce the laws at the border. And it is brought in kind of a scary level of the numbers of people that are coming in. And of course, any, I just got a text. Well, Jorge will never be able to say that again. I've never been ejected from a press conference before. And Jorge is another question. But this idea that Jorge is going to stand up to us and force us to live up to our ideals, that sounds like, what's the name of that book, Rules for Radicals, or the Cloward Piven thing, make them live up to their own rules. This guy is super far to the left, and I just don't buy into where he's coming from. Anyway, Kelly O'Connell, I hope you have a great weekend. Thanks for tuning in to AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, and it's been a real pleasure spending some time with you this week, and we'll meet you back at the beginning of next week. Ciao. So we're making love. And that's really nothing we can do. If we want to.